Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Join us each week as we delve into some of life's most complex questions. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier, and I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on HeyZRadio.com. Welcome. See, Karen, I did not even come close to screwing that up tonight.
You did really well, and I was waiting.
Thank you.
Because we were being a little silly just before we came on, so, you know, I thought I had you distracted.
Nope. I'm going to be try to be completely and totally professional tonight, because tonight we have got an excellent show lined up for everybody. Just want to get it out of the way before we do, you know, introductions and all that. We're going to be joined by Steve Parsons, a parapsychologist from the United Kingdom. He is the co-founder of Parascience, which is actually gets a lot of really good marks from Dr. Kieran O'Keefe from The Most Haunted. So, I mean, you know, you got to be good if Kieran O'Keefe is saying these guys are all right. He is also a member of the Spontaneous Cases Committee of the Society for Psychical Research, and everybody knows how much I love the SPR. So that's who we got joining us
too tonight.
That is a great show, in my opinion.
He's
also a pioneer in the new science of infrasound, which either can explain the paranormal as being nothing, or paranormal activities being nothing more than a hallucination. However, in my personal opinion, I see it as a fueler for paranormal activity. But we will be speaking to the undisputed champ of that tonight.
Very good. It sounds like it's going to be a great interview. Looking forward to it. I always like it when we have guests on the show from whom I can learn.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So before we get into anything else, Cheryl also wanted me to let you know that we are done with our March contest. Hey, Cheryl, do you have like a winner you want to announce or anything?
I do. I would love to announce our winner for the March contest.
Who is it?
Our winner is Patty Valdez.
Yay, Patty!
And yay!
And she won a whole Robin Marie package.
She won a lot of good stuff.
She did. And, you know, this is Patty is a good friend of mine, so yay, Patty! Does she know she won yet?
She does. I told her. Yeah,
because she didn't mention it to me. So
I guess
I'm not as good of a friend as I thought. So the March contest with all of the Robin Marie goodies has passed, but now we have a brand new contest.
Woo!
And this is our April contest, and the prizes are from me this time around. And
they're cool prizes too, I might add.
What's that? Yeah.
Very cool prizes.
So one person will win three things. They will win an autographed copy of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington.
Great book. They will
win an autographed copy of my brand new book, which is called Dancing with the Afterlife. And then also, I don't know if I mention it much on the show, but I make jewelry. And I have a really cool red skull necklace with some kind of pretty gothy, swirly stuff. It's gunmetal colored with a red skull on it and some little red jewels and stuff. Very neat necklace. I'm going to get a picture of the prizes to Cheryl soon. I just haven't done it yet because I've been busy. So anyway, all you have to do is email the phrase that pays all. We were trying to come up with a paranormal version of the phrase that pays.
Mm-hmm. And this goes with the most.
I was thinking the booyah for the moolah.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Thank you. Patty just texted and said, "Hey, Karen, I won the March contest." She's clearly listening. Hi, Patty. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Patty.
Anyway, so here is the phrase that you must email to Cheryl, which is editor@paranormalunderground.net. That's the email address, not the booyah for the moolah. The phrase that pays this month is Nellie Sharp. And if you want to know what that's all about, you need to read Dancing with the Afterlife.
Yes.
Yeah. So, exciting email. So, the two words, Nellie Sharp.
That's all they have
to do. Make sure you spell it right and capitalize it. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Email it to editor@paranormalunderground.net. And on April 30th, the contest ends, and we'll have a new winner.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? Okay, I got to tell you something, though. I do love the ghost with the most. But, however, I want to test something here. Is there, for the next contest, is there anybody here that would like a signed picture of yours truly? I doubt that incredibly highly, so...
You know, here's what you should do, Rick. You should sign yourself, you never know, like, Rick, across your chest, take your shirt off, sign yourself, and then take a picture of it.
Nobody wants to see that. I don't even think my wife wants to see that. So
it'd be awesome.
I don't think so.
Oh, my gosh. So get on that, folks. You've got 4 weeks to email Cheryl. Mm-hmm. editor@paranormalunderground.net, two books and a really groovy necklace. And if you're a dude who wins, I could switch it up and send you not the really fancy necklace. I could send you like the boy version.
Cool.
It is so metrosexual and so beautiful that even, you know, guyliner hairdo Zach Bagans would wear one. So
the boy version or the pretty gothy one?
I'm thinking the pretty gothy one, and I'm thinking that Cheryl is also saying I need to put the disclaimer on immediately.
Hey, I want the gothy one. That's all I know.
Oh, well, you can't. I'm afraid that you
can't enter. I know. I'm going to have to buy it from you.
It's going to somebody else as a prize.
Okay.
Well, you would make me one, wouldn't you?
I would make you one, yes. Or you can always go to Mary Elizabeth Jewels, which is my Etsy shop. So it's like Etsy.com/shop/ Mary Elizabeth Jewels, and you can see all kinds of the pretty kind of gothy stuff that I do. So Cheryl,
oh, cool.
You could actually go look and find the really gothy necklace. I'll send you the link when we're on break or something.
I'll do that.
Which we're going to do in like a minute. So do we have any other business we need to take care of at the top of the show?
I have something, and it has to do with Paranormal Underground magazine. We have a new issue coming out tonight. It will be online on paranormalunderground.net by the end of the night.
Woo. Okay, that is something to look forward to.
Yes,
it is something to look forward to, and it's got some really great stuff in it. So
everyone will want to read it. How's that?
Everyone will want to read it. Yes. That's a fact.
There you go.
All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do for people in chat? I am putting a link to the gothy necklace that is part of this package.
And there it is.
It's in chat. You go look. Okay.
Red chat. We still
of course, the people in chat are like 10 seconds behind us or something, so they're looking at that and going, what? In a few minutes, you'll know what I mean, and then you click on that link. Anyway, break.
Yep.
And then we will come back with our guest. Awesome. And I keep wanting to call him Alan Parsons, and I know that's not...
Oh, Karen.
The Alan Parsons Project.
I'm so from the 80s, can you tell?
That's awesome. More like 70s, Karen. You know, you're really starting to date yourself.
I'm
there
from the early 80s. I became an adult in 1984. Oh my god, I'm old.
Oh,
as long as you still say dude.
Dude.
Good.
All right,
good.
So stick around. We will be right back. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground. Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Karen Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi, everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week, we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So, please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com. Hey, this is Karen Frazier, writer and radio host with Paranormal Underground. Since I wrote my book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington in 2010, people have asked me what happened next. In my new book, Dancing with the Afterlife, a paranormal memoir, my Wellington story continues. Dancing with the Afterlife is more than the continuation of the Wellington story, however. It's also the story of a lifetime of afterlife research and paranormal encounters. What I've learned has changed my life, and it might change yours as well. To learn more about Dancing with the Afterlife or to read an excerpt from the book, visit DancingWithTheAfterlife.com. Thank you.
This is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Hazy Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts.
Boom! You did
it. My gosh. HazyRadio.com. Oh.
One for you, one for me.
A month in, Rick.
Oh my gosh. Anyways, this is hazyradio.com. And where are the ghosts with the most, ladies? Joining us tonight is going all the way from the United Kingdom is going to be parapsychologist, co-founder of Parascience, and member of the Spontaneous Case Committee of the Society for Psychical Research, and pioneer in infrasound, Steve Parsons. Steve, welcome to the Underground.
Hi, thanks, Rick. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Hello. Thank you so much for coming on. We That's love right. the Society for Psychical Research on this show.
Yes.
I'm glad we love it too. It's only a year older, 2 years older than the American Society for Psychical Research.
Which right. we also love. You know, I was doing a talk at a conference recently, and I was talking about all the great research organizations that did research and the actual scientific research into afterlife stuff. And I totally blanked on the name of the SPR. I was like, I couldn't come up with it. I was so embarrassed.
No.
Fortunately, somebody in the room remembered what it was.
Oh, that's good news. At least we haven't been too forgotten.
No, definitely not. I mean, I actually sent an application into the ASPR about 2 years ago, and they sent me back a letter with a middle finger and a big FU. So, you know,
if I'm correct, that would be because the ASPR currently has ceased to exist, or has gone into remission, or has
right.
To the best of my knowledge, the ASPR is currently not functioning.
Right. No, I know. That was it. Yeah, exactly.
So, with the spontaneous cases, tell me what those are.
Okay, spontaneous cases relate specifically to, my area of expertise, ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, things that go bump in the night, as separate from areas of psi research, which would be the telepathy, clairvoyance, testing of mediums, telekinesis, etc. So I'm the ghost hunter.
Very right. good. Okay. Thank you.
So what, you know, when it comes to the idea of ghosts and hauntings, what are your views? Are we, when we go to somebody's house and they say, you know, I've got this apparition floating through my room while I'm drinking a beer, watching a Cubs game. And it has happened, Steve, it has happened. What exactly are people dealing with? Are they seeing a hallucination, telepathy of some kind, or are we really dealing with, you know, life after death?
Well, the short answer is we don't know.
Exactly.
The longer answer is we take every case at face value and deal with the evidence that we're presented with. So it's a case of being led by the evidence. It may be that the person is actually seeing an apparition floating across the room. It's the cause that we're more interested in. Is that an external cause? Is that an environmental cause? Or is that something that's perhaps psychological or related to the can of drink that they've got in the hand?
Right, and sometimes that's the case. So I always think that, because I investigate the paranormal as part of a team, and I always imagine that we're probably doing it horribly wrong. And I certainly know that some of the shows that we see on television are doing it wrong. So as somebody who actually takes a really reasoned and scientific approach to this, tell me, what are we doing wrong?
I'm not sure there is actually. I mean, there are lots of things that investigators do wrongly or badly, but in terms of doing it wrong, I think it's as much about misleading ourselves as investigators as misleading the client that we're working for or with in terms of expectations and what we can deliver. You know, all too often the investigators will go in and they'll say, you know, we've found this, that, and the other. We can detect these things. We can shift them. We can make them go to the light. And there, I think, you know, you are deluding yourself as an investigator, but also you're seriously misleading the client with what your capabilities as an investigator are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know what, Steve, the thing that really bothers me, one of the few many things that bothers me about the field today.
I've read the rants, Rick. I've read the rants.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you're familiar with my ideology and philosophy on pop ghost hunting. But, you know, the thing that really bothers me the most is the idea of fear. And, you know, ever since I started doing investigations back in the early 90s, I've always had the ideology or the philosophy that I'm not there to make you afraid. I'm there to take away that fear. And where do you think this fear stems from that we deal with? Is it a superstition thing? Is it a sensational thing? Or is it something deeper than that?
If we look at the history of ghosts and hauntings, right the way back to the Roman times and beyond, there is always a fear element. It's the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of what lies beyond death. But more recently, if we deal with pop ghost hunting, what you're dealing with there is something completely different in terms of the media. What they have to ramp up. They've got to deliver an entertainment program. They've got to deliver for the viewers. And, you know, ghosts, let's be honest, are relatively dull and boring. They float through things. They bump and bang. And so, you know, once the investigators had clattered around the buildings with their night vision cameras and realized that the ghosts weren't actually going to do very much, then we had the introduction of the demonic element, the evil entity.
Oh, my God, Steve, don't even get me started. But please, go ahead.
we're ramping up the fear factor. What in actual fact is happening is, back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, people used to go to the movie theater on a Saturday night, and they used to watch the horror film or the scary movie. But now they can take part. They can sit at home, and then they can go out at weekends with their investigation teams. And, you know, ghost hunting has become, in effect, an interactive scary movie.
Right.
And
Yeah, that's why I don't like the term ghost hunting.
I do.
Because it's to me, that's about scaring yourself.
Well, you heard me mumble, I do.
I did hear you, yes.
I don't like the term, for me, parapsychologist. I prefer psychical researcher, psychical investigator.
Sure.
But that has connotations that people misunderstand what I'm doing and think that I'm investigating psychics.
Right.
Ghost hunting is a term that's, I think, has been universally applied since the early 20th century with Harry Price and Elliot O'Donnell and others. And it's a term I think that people understand. It's a term that's become misused. I mean, we don't hunt them. I'm waiting for the first television program where they take to guns.
It's coming, especially here in the States.
It's coming. I mean, we've got the SWAT teams out there now and, you know, the paramilitary investigators. So I'm waiting for the team with guns. But as yet, we don't actively hunt ghosts. But we do hunt for evidence of ghosts.
Yeah.
And it's a good old-fashioned term that, you know, describes what we do. A few years ago, Parascience did try to introduce a new term because, you know, ufologists have their own ology and parapsychology has its own ology, cryptozoology. And we looked at the term manasology to describe people who study and investigate ghosts. And we've promoted that from time to time, but, you know, generally, I'm quite happy to call myself a good old-fashioned ghost hunter.
Yeah.
Except at Halloween when I'm a Ghostbuster.
There you go. Well, and it's exactly what you said is the reason I don't like it is we're not out hunting. And yet there are a lot of people that's what they're doing. They're going out hunting and they're thrill-seeking.
Oh, God.
Absolutely. You know, there's room for that. But I think that people who take themselves and what they do seriously don't always want to be lumped in with all of the people that are going out and, you know, screaming, "Did you touch me?" and, you know, cussing and swearing and all of that stuff. So,
and of course, don't forget dressing up.
Oh, yes.
You know, you've got to have the, you know, you've got to have the SWAT jacket, you've got to have the logo sweatshirt, you've got to have the, you know, the black chinos with the pockets. I mean, there's a saying over here, I don't know if it's current in America, clothes maketh the man. Yeah, I think possibly with, you know, I think possibly with paranormal investigators, I think it's a case of flight cases maketh the investigator. you know, they turn up. We haven't got the blacked out fleets of vehicles yet over here, but you know, no ghost hunter worth his salt would be seen without, you know, a carload full of flight cases adorned with the group logo and the group website selling the ubiquitous mugs, t-shirts, and all the other paraphernalia that goes with it.
But yeah, you know, I don't have that stuff. I have I have a recorder. I mean, I have some of the fun equipment just because I think it's interesting and I like to deal with gadgets, but I pretty much just take myself and maybe a recorder and, you know, something to write with, and every once in a while I'll pull some gadget out, and that's good enough for me, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, ghost hunting, you know, it's great if you're a gadget freak. I mean, I must admit I am, but they're an inventive lot, aren't they? You know, mm-hmm. there's a group, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention them on the radio, but I'm going to anyway, so bleep me out, because Paranology is based over your side of the water. I've come up with some really inventive, good-looking gadgets over the years.
Yeah.
Their usefulness, I would question, but certainly they're, you know, as a fascinating toy to play with, something that lights up 20 different colors in the dark, mm-hmm. Will tell me a great deal about what's happening.
Yeah, those REM pods are pretty spectacular looking. I don't have one myself, but they make like the wee noise and they light up.
Yeah, that's very important.
But it is, isn't it? Don't you think all serious ghost hunters have to have something that goes woo?
You know what though, Steve? I'm like you in a way. Although I do, I really still do prefer the old school method of doing things. I still like using a compass. I still like, you know, doing the the candle and, you know, the cyclone lamp and all that. I still like doing all that stuff. But I got to tell you something, man. I have seen some really, really great stuff with a lot of the equipment that's out there. I just got one of those laser pointers. And First off, my kid loves it. You know, I mean, I shine it on the wall in the room and he's running around, you know, looking at everything.
Cats.
He's 2 years old.
Too.
Cats, totally. But, you know, I have seen some really great stuff. I actually, I did an investigation. It was when I was with a much larger group a few years ago. And we had the laser grid in the room. And we actually watched as the points of light of the laser would move. They would move around the room. And then they would get bigger and then poof. And then and then they would take another one and then move it around the room. And there was, not only was the client in the room with us, but there was like five or six of us in that room as well, because that's where most of the activity was. And I'm hoping to see that again, because I have never seen that before.
Can I just ask, was it a green laser pointer?
Yes.
The problem with the green ones is, of course, that often the laser diode itself is subject to fluctuations depending on temperature, because the green lasers in particular are well known for the beam fluctuation. So possibly I think what we're dealing with.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. It's specific to the cheaper green models, and if you actually look at the technology behind the green laser pointer, particularly the cheaper models, many of the manufacturers actually refer to this problem and developments of the laser pointer to try and eliminate it. It's a very long technical answer, but green laser pointers are notoriously unreliable. Well known for fluctuating, of course. And if the actual beam itself is fluctuating, the laser lasing diode, then of course the light coming through the optical system to generate the grid could also easily start moving, because the beam itself will be unfocused.
That explains.
Sorry.
A lot. No, that's no, perfect.
No,
that's
I'm not going to lie to you. Here.
If it'd been a red one.
Yeah, right. That's exactly the kind of stuff we want to hear, though, because
yeah.
I think that with all of this equipment that's available out there, in our eagerness to use it, we don't always take the time to learn as much as we can. For instance, one of my friends, Elaine, was telling me about echoes on EVPs with the high def recording devices, like I use the H4, and that like an echo can appear on your recording. She said like something like from as long as up to a minute after somebody said it.
Right.
So I don't think that we take the time to learn those things about our equipment because we're so eager to get evidence. And, you know, I mean, we want the evidence, but I don't know about other people, but I'd like my evidence to actually be evidence as well.
You're absolutely right. I think one of the key things when talking to investigators and our own team, whenever they get some new gadgets or some new equipment, the first thing we say to them is RTFM. Read the flaming manual.
Yeah.
Because you're operating, when you actually come to use the equipment, you're going to be using it often in unfamiliar situations where the lighting might not be ideal, or you may have to operate it quickly. And modern electronic gadgets, I mean, I know the Zoom H4 quite well, and it has a multitude of options and different functions, all controlled by very few buttons. And it's, you know, sequences and menus and options. And if you're not familiar with that piece of equipment, you know, the amount of times that I've been presented with a recording or a photograph or a piece of video, well, when you look at the time frame on it, it's saying the 1st of January 1931 or something ridiculous because nobody even set the clock.
Right.
Rudimentary stuff like that, or, oh, I forgot to. I mean, we were doing an investigation some years ago, and the guy kept coming up saying that the camcorder was malfunctioning. And every time he started it, it would run for a minute, and then it would stop, and then it would seemingly rewind the tip of its own accord. I said to him, have you opened the door and actually checked that you're not at the end of the tape? it's simple things like that. Yeah, it does happen. And that's why, you know, if you're going to get the gadgets, then you're going to have to learn how to use them. Otherwise, as we find out, people will just end up bamboozling themselves with the results. You know, just talk about photography for a minute. If we go for a day out to a scenic place, an old building, you haven't got very many castles over there, but a castle. And you're going with the family, it's a nice day, and you're just going on a family day out. You might take 100, 200 digital photographs. You come home, you look at them on the computer, you might print a few, and you might share a few. If you go to the same location as part of a paranormal investigation, and you take the same number of photographs, and you bring them back and look at them on the computer, I guarantee you will scrutinize every single pixel of every single photograph, looking for something wrong, an anomaly, something that you're not expecting. And, you know, every camera, every digital camera, every film camera will produce these anomalies. They're just part of the everyday functioning of the camera. But we ascribe them as being paranormal simply because of the context they were taken.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, that's one of the things that I think about a lot as somebody who investigates ghosts and hauntings is how much is my interpretation, how much is my wanting there to be something, how much is a little bit of self-delusion, because let's face it, we're all self-delusional to some extent. And so I think about that a lot. And do you think that paranormal or ghost hunters, do you think that we tend to put more interpretation into our data than we should, as opposed to just presenting facts?
I think that largely depends upon why you're there, plus your own beliefs as well, of course, because you've got to bear in mind that you, regardless of how objective you might consider yourself, you know, I mean, I consider myself to be an objective, evidence-led investigator, but nonetheless, I am there looking for evidence of the paranormal or some, you know, cause of experiences of the original witnesses. But nonetheless, I'm still there deep down inside me. I want to see a ghost. I want to have that experience.
Sure.
And it's very, very difficult to separate the objective investigator from the subjective person, the human being.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even think it's possible. You go, you know, if you are on a ghost hunt, you are on a ghost hunt. And you will always, there is always a tendency, therefore, for anything, you know, any information, evidence that you gather to be slightly skewed by that. And it's a very, very difficult thing to train yourself to avoid.
Right. You know what, I really on it always viewed this as being something that's highly subjective. Like you said, it all goes down to belief system. You know, you got this person that thinks it's a demon. You got, you know, people like myself that's like, no, it's actually a poltergeist. Do you think that we will ever be able to prove that these kind of things exist to, you know, say people like, you know, Dr. Michael Shermer or, you know, the amazing, well, not so amazing Randy. Father Christmas. Do you ever think that there will come a time where we say, okay, this is what we got. This is the evidence. Take a look at it. And they're like, wow, yeah, all right, I'm actually seeing a ghost here. So do you ever think we'll get to that point?
I would like to hope so. What we can do is we can chip away at the areas of the known. So, for example, we can use experimentation to determine that. If we could take the case of orbs, for example, we now know. William, those over here, if there's anybody in the UK listening, yes, I brought up orbs again. But
that was a hilarious picture, by the way, with you standing by the country road. My wife says, you know, orbs will stop being paranormal if I get 10,000 likes. I almost laughed myself silly when I saw that.
I'm quite well known here in the UK for my my war against the little blighters. but you know, if we take that, we do now know because of quality research and investigation that these are, when they appear on digital cameras, they are now understood anomalies, and so that they're known. Likewise with some of the environmental factors, my specialist area, infrasound. So we can assign them to the known category and then focus our investigations more towards the areas that we don't yet understand. And we might, you know, fill in a few more pieces into the jigsaw, and gradually draw nearer or reduce the area of lack of understanding. Sure. Whether we'll actually get to, you know, the word paranormal, you know, it's, I don't think we've ever been able to say something is paranormal because we don't understand what paranormal actually is. And if we do understand it, it becomes normal.
Sure.
But, you know, all investigators can do is fill in the jigsaw pieces as we get the opportunities, as research, as experimentation develops, and indeed as equipment allows us to. You know, we're able to do stuff now that investigators in the 20s and 30s would only dream about. Who knows what we'll be able to achieve, future investigators will be able to achieve in 100 years.
Well, yeah, I was just talking to a friend of mine about that. I consider my son, you know, he's 2 years old, and I'm really hoping that one day he's going to take, you know, over for his old man. I'm really honestly hoping that. If he doesn't, he doesn't. That's fine. But I can't help but think that it's like, I have like this, you know, the electromagnetic field detector. I know how to use it, but what is he going to have when he is my age? And when it comes to equipment, and trust me, I really want to, you know, I really want to focus on infrasound, and I kind of want to do that when we come back from, you know, our top of the hour break. But what is the trend of equipment that we're seeing now? Holograms, anything like that? I mean, things that are actually going to sense smells, that's a huge one that we have to constantly deal with is a phantom smell. What's the trend of the equipment right now?
The trend, it was, I mean, the big thing was electromagnetics a few years ago, the self-sensor, the K2, and all of the other devices. More recently, it seems to be moving into areas of EVP, so recording equipment, and recording equipment associated with EMF equipment, or with temperature sensing equipment, or indeed now also apps for, you know, the various tablets and phone devices.
Sure.
But I, at the moment, over here in the UK, certainly, and also portrayed on the media, we might be a series or two behind you over there, but it does seem to be EVP. Still, you know, very much the focus.
Well, I love EVP. That's got to be my favorite thing. Yeah, everybody always talks about this, you know, the Holy Grail, which is kind of an absurd term. But, you know, with like photographs and with videos and stuff like that. But it's like, if I'm in a house and I'm with like, you know, another investigator, or I'm just with the client, like if I'm running something on my own and I hear that voice that I cannot explain, to me, that's everything in the world.
But you can't explain it.
No, I can't explain it. But
that doesn't mean it doesn't have an explanation, though.
Right.
That's true.
But I love hearing it.
It's great. I'm with you entirely. You know, the shivers down the spine. But at the same time, I want to know, what is the source of the voice? Can we, first of all, eliminate all of the known causes? Can we demonstrate and prove that there is no electromagnetic interference from a radio source? And these can be, you know, nearby in the form of a police transmission, a cell phone, a radio station. It can be an aircraft flying overhead. It can be even a distant radio station, sure, as we demonstrated in some cases. When you've eliminated all of those, then the voice becomes even more interesting.
Well, what I think is interesting that how you say that is, and believe me, I am like 110% on you with that. But for example, I had an EVP, and I wish I still had it, but the group that I used to belong to, the group leader was sort of a Nazi about stuff, and he owned everything and whatever. I wasn't allowed to keep it. And I asked this very pointed question, because this activity seemed to be centering around this 11-year-old – excuse me, he was 9 at the time. He's 11 now. A 9-year-old boy at the time. And I asked the question, why are you here, and why is this boy so special? Now – if a random voice came back and said, you know, something, you know, and then the Cubs have just hit a home run. And you know what, Dan, don't even start with me, okay? Anyways, now, but the response that I got was very intelligent to what I, it was very salient to my question. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, the boy is very special to me. Get out of my house, you asshole. Now, mm-hmm. he must know me personally or something. Because that was the most pointed answer I have ever received in an EVP before.
I'd like to put in a disclaimer that, you know, I am not saying that spirits can't communicate using these electronic means.
No, totally know that.
But at the same time, you know, we've got to look at all of the other possibilities, and I'm sure, you know, mm-hmm. that they've been considered. The possibility, you know, the most likely, I'm sure, you know, one of the skeptical psychologists would say, well, you heard what you wanted to hear, or you heard what you expected to hear. You made sense of the noise that was on the recording. I mean, that's one explanation. An equally valid explanation would be that a deceased spirit communicated via an electronic means. You know, with such little amounts of information, I think the conundrum is we're always going to be hard-pressed to determine which the accurate answer is, because we only do get these very, very small glimpses of information that usually are completely insufficient. Right. And they're also, you know, more often entirely contradictory, because probably the next EVP that follows something that is so compelling would be a set of sports results or some complete nonsense. that would throw you a complete curveball and undermine, you know, the whole thing. I mean, I try and maintain a position of sitting directly on the fence and not being neither a believer nor a skeptic. But, you know, I am human, and you find that you study a case or you're involved in an investigation that draws you in a particular direction. And for a period of time, you are in one camp, and then you will do something, see something, work on an experiment, read a book that will drag you back the other way. So I, you know, my role seems to be permanently climbing back on the damn fence.
Okay. I get that. So my question is that you mention all of these variables when you're doing an EVP session. There are all these things that it could be, and you need to eliminate all of these possibilities. How do you control variables so that you limit these possibilities in what's really a very uncontrolled environment? I mean, if you're in a dusty old castle, it's not a controlled environment.
No, you're absolutely right, and this is one of the problems that spontaneous case investigators have when dealing with parapsychologists, because parapsychologists live in, you know, they work in university departments where they can completely control their experiments with, you know, often with mediums or in the Ganzfeld chambers or the psychomantium, and they always, you know, say to us, oh, well, you can't prove that this didn't happen and that didn't happen, because we are trying to deal with chaos. But we can impose some controls. For example, specifically relating to your question about EVP, we can't realistically shut down the entire electromagnetic spectrum for, it would have to be an entire hemisphere in order to guarantee there was no impingement onto the recording. But what we can do is that we can build a small Faraday cage around the recorder that would prevent the stray electromagnetism hitting, you know, or getting to the recording device. So that's one way in which we can apply some degree of control. The control might be flawed, and we can recognize those flaws, and we can build them into the results and state, you know, it's imperfect, but, you know, we are dealing with the real world. But we have applied these degrees of control to the experiment and eliminated, you know, so many effects. We did some measurements of electromagnetism in relation to hauntings. And one of the techniques, as well as using Faraday cages, was we went 450 meters underground in a disused coal mine to try and remove some of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, most definitely you do run into that. You know, one of the interesting things that I always found about, you know, with like using the electromagnetic field detector, you see on the television and you see a lot of people and they make the mistake of they're waving this thing around in the air. And
yeah,
of course
works.
That doesn't work, obviously, but
right.
You know, you try and tell them that it's like, you can't do that. Put it in a place, just set it down as far away from any electrical outlet, any electrical appliance or whatever, to keep those false positives down. But it just doesn't always seem to work. Now, you talk about the Faraday cage. Can you explain that to our listeners a little bit, what that is?
A Faraday cage is essentially a metal box that can be perforated, but is also grounded. Mm-hmm. And any electromagnetic energy hitting it immediately is drawn around the skin of the metal box.
Sure.
And away to ground. So it doesn't actually penetrate into the box. Now, they aren't perfect. I mean, you know, there are groups out there that advocate putting your EVP recorder into a microwave oven. I could think of a few other parts of the equipment that could go into the microwave as well. But, you know, microwaves don't get out, therefore electromagnetic waves don't get in. It's actually incorrect, because your mobile phone won't work in a microwave oven because it's designed to prevent microwave energy leaking out, and a mobile phone is a microwave transmitter. But if you use a VHF radio, you can operate it. You can use your cell phone inside a jetliner, even though effectively it would be at some frequencies a Faraday cage. So you have to design the Faraday cage for the specific range of frequencies that you're dealing with.
Right, but with that, I mean, I've never actually used a Faraday cage, but I think I may, you know, experiment with one because I always have found it fascinating. But when you're using, you know, something like an EMF detector, and of course it's going to give you false positives, is there a certain distance that you can set away from something electrical so it doesn't pick up those false positives?
Well, we're very close to the top of the hour, but it's a very, very short answer to that, because one of the interesting discoveries we made a few years ago, when we first got electromagnetic field detectors that could not only give you amplitude but could also tell you the frequency, right. We discovered, I mean, we'd always blame the mains, the electrical services, you know, the 60 hertz in America, 50 hertz over here, as being the primary candidate. You know, if there's a bad ground or there's a malfunction in the wiring, you would get higher levels of EMF. And if you couldn't find any electrical wiring, therefore it must be paranormal, or some other external cause. Mm-hmm. What we discovered is that it was actually much, much, much lower frequency electromagnetics that were being picked up and re-radiated by the building's wiring. In our case over here, it was the BBC World Service transmitters that were operating in the long wave.
See, you know what? I knew Monty Python was always right about the BBC. Proceed, sir.
And so, yeah, the building wiring was in fact the secondary source, because it was acting as a re-radiating antenna for the primary source, which was, you know, 100, 200 miles away.
Wow. Mm. So there is no safe distance.
Yeah, wow. So one question from the chat room to sneak in just before we take our top of the hour break. And Elaine wants to know, if you could investigate anywhere, where would it be?
It would definitely have to be either the Queen Mary or Alcatraz Island.
Cheryl's done the Queen Mary.
See, I just get jealous.
Yeah.
Well, I get jealous when you got, you know, talking about investigating moldy old castles.
Yeah.
We don't get that here. I mean, my house is 100 years old, and it's that's laughable.
I was going to say, yeah, most of the people over here live in houses that are older than your country.
Exactly. I know. We're so young over here. But we still have ghosts. So let's do this. We are right at the top of the hour. We are going to take a break. And then when we come back, I know Rick has some stuff that he's been dying to ask.
Cool.
So stick around, everybody. We're talking to Steve Parsons. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
This is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. We're back at Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com. At hazyradio.com.
Oh,
I know. I'm going to keep us from getting sued. I'm telling you. It's going to happen.
Hazy Radio Network.
The Hazy Radio Network. For the last 45 minutes or so, we have been enjoying a fantastic conversation with Steve Parsons of the SPR, as well as Parascience over in the UK. And so, Steve, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Okay, fantastic.
What time is it where you are? It's like really, really late or early.
Currently, 4 minutes past 3 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, no wonder you're hitting that espresso. You got, like, mainlining yet, or?
I Ghost Hunters, we exist on, I always say, we exist on the three E's. It's caffeine, codeine, and nicotine. It's no wonder that we see ghosts, isn't it?
is codeine bombed out of our head.
Oh, absolutely.
Over the counter, is it?
Yes.
Not here in the U.S. Boy, I would like that.
Oh, I'll have to bring some over when I come. But no, it's slightly tongue-in-cheek, of course. But, you know, yeah, nothing wrong with espresso.
So before we get into what Rick wants to cover, I actually have a question from Chuck in chat. And, oh, but people keep chatting and it keeps making the question scroll off my screen. So I'll try to do it fast here. I was also wondering about argon gases and how after we pass that maybe it can hold on to our intelligence, emotions, and carry us from place to place. What do you think about that?
I have absolutely no idea. It's not something I've ever heard mentioned or discussed before. Certainly early spiritualism and psychical research looked at, they identified this unknown substance as ether, these sort of gaseous, vaporous world that surrounds us. But I've never heard anything in relation to any of the specific noble gases.
Okay. Well, because he said, just a sec now, if everybody could just not chat for a sec. He said that it could explain why we can see spirits with IR and full spectrum. Can we see spirits with IR and full spectrum, do you think?
I would say there is absolutely no evidence that we can. It's something I've always wondered. Why on earth are we using infrared and full spectrum? If we look back at the history of infrared, you know, Harry Price back in the 1930s, one of his greatest wishes was the use of infrared cinematography in order to be able to view the actions of mediums inside the seance room. The first infrared cameras existed just before then, or at the late 1920s. Scottish inventor John Logie Baird demonstrated a device called the Noctovisor, which used flooded the room or chamber with infrared light and projected a picture onto a screen. But, you know, we're there to test the claim of a witness. Somebody has seen a ghost. Somebody has seen an apparition, had an experience. They can't see an infrared. They probably had the lights on. So if we want to photograph the same phenomena that they observed, then we need to be using a camera that's seeing in the visible spectrum, because that's where they're looking. If we start looking within the infrared or the ultraviolet or indeed anywhere else in the thermal ranges, the deep infrared using thermography, we're actually going to be looking for something that there's no report anybody's ever seen. Moreover, because of the unusual way the results are presented and our unfamiliarity with those results, I mean, we're used to seeing a picture as a black and white or as a color two-dimensional presentation on a screen or as a print. Sure. If we see a thermal image with false coloring or an infrared image with false coloring, we're not used to understanding it correctly. And so we see anomalies that maybe aren't there, that are just simply an artifact of the production of the image. But, you know, the original witness, the person who saw the first ghost, saw it with their own eyes. They didn't see it with an infrared viewing device. So if they saw it using visible light, we should be looking in that same part of the electromagnetic spectrum.
That makes perfect sense.
So turn the lights on when you're ghost hunting.
Absolutely. I've always felt that was a good
You work plan. Better. Your cameras work better. If you turn the lights off and sit in a dark room for 5 minutes, you'll be asleep or hypnotized.
Well, sure. And how long doesn't it take your eyes a long time to adjust to
changes in light? Minutes. About 20 minutes once you turn the lights down before you get your full night vision, as opposed to infrared
night.
You
don't click on flashlights or anything,
yeah,
right?
And I mean, we've all been on these ghost hunts, and, you know, some of them are like disco shows. There's that many flashing lights. There's equipment flashing at you. You're putting your light on to look at your wristwatch. You're operating the camera. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you sit, and we've done it, you know, 5 minutes, it's 2 a.m. Well, it's actually later than that here, but at, you know, middle of the night, it doesn't matter how much sleep you've had during the day. If you turn off all the lights and sit there quietly, 5 minutes later, you'll have an altered state of consciousness. You'll be hypnotized asleep. Is it any wonder then that you start reporting things?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know,
and anyway, you know, if the guy's watching, as Rick said earlier, if the guy's watching the Cubs match, you know, they're not on at 2 o'clock in the morning with the lights out. An analogy we always use over here when we're talking to people about the techniques of investigation and why we leave the lights on is, if you're watching your favorite TV program, 8 o'clock in the evening, family are there, and a big fat spider walks across the floor, you don't miss it.
No.
But if you turn off the lights, you won't see that spider.
That's a good reason to leave the lights on during investigation.
Very good, right there. Exactly.
Yeah, I remember the very first time I ever saw an episode of Ghost Hunters, and they turned the lights out and they're in the dark and they got all this really neat camera equipment happening, and the only thing that I could think to myself is, your camera is only seeing in the direction that you're aiming at. Who knows what is standing approximately 5 feet away from you to your left or to your right? I mean, if I was a ghost, Steve, and I probably will be one day, and I plan on haunting the heck out of somebody, I would be like, I'm standing over here. But with the lights on.
I was chuckling at it because I've done more than my share of television, including some episodes of Most Haunted, which is the British equivalent of Ghost Hunters.
Sure.
And when you said, you know, the camera doesn't show you what's standing 5 feet to the right, I was actually I wasn't thinking in terms of the paranormal. I was thinking in terms of the rest of the crew and what they're up to and about.
Because
you know, I think what people forget in this sort of media-led ghost hunting is that the show is not there to portray an accurate investigation. Right. It's there to entertain. It's primarily and foremostly an entertainment program.
Yes.
It's wrapped around the idea of a paranormal investigation, but it's probably, you know, as close to a real investigation as the Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity. You know, it is first and foremost to entertain and to sell advertising space.
Right. And, so, you know,
people forget that.
So I was thinking about, I like to look on like the SPR website and also ASSAP, which is also in the UK, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And I know on the ASSAP website that they talk a lot about the difference between a vigil and an investigation. And I feel like what a lot of us do, at least in the United States, is we do the vigil without the investigation. Is the word vigil and investigation, are those common words that you guys use, or is that just specific to ASSAP, do you know?
Well, vigil is a word that we try to steer away from. Have done for a long, long time. Vigil, in regard to the ASAP, the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena, in relation to that, it refers to a single visit. So you would go along and have a vigil. An investigation is the longer term, you know, total package, which might consist of a series of vigils and other components too. But the word vigil conjures up other ideas within the client, because a lot of people associate that with pseudo-religious practices of or occult practices, whereby you gather around a candle and you chant things so vigil does have that connotation and is one that, you know, we would, you know, actively avoid using.
Okay, yeah. Good enough. Well, I think what I was thinking about was that I know a lot of teams, and sometimes mine included, it's the one visit where you go to the place and you sit.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the investigations you do with the SPR are far more encompassing, involving several visits and extensive interviews and background research. Is that true?
Well, would hope so. it's not always possible, but
sure.
But you know, sometimes you are faced with a one-shot deal. But in terms of an investigation, the longer the greater the, you know, the longer the investigation goes on for, the greater the opportunity you have of completing the all, you know, answering all of the different questions that may be raised there. With Parascience, we undertook an investigation that lasted 3 years and ran to more than 1,500, approaching 2,000 site hours.
Wow.
That was one single investigation. Others are well into three, you know, four figures in the number of site hours. But these extended visits, we say that, you know, we might have been to a location for 8 hours. We went once. If we take the example of the Queen Mary, over the years, probably hundreds of teams have spent thousands of site hours there.
Sure.
And in each team, there is probably 8 to 20 people. So that becomes tens of thousands of man hours at the same location. What interests me and challenges me as an investigator is the lack of evidence. Because one might expect that given, you know, so many thousands of man hours expended at one location, you know, even if we assume that the paranormal is extremely rare, there has been no coincidental, you know, nobody's walked around the corner and bumped into the ghost or grabbed that compelling photograph of the apparition or that really mind-blowing EVP. We just, you know, from these locations, Eastern State Penitentiary, over here we have, you know, similar places, Woodchester Mansion and others. We don't see the evidence. We see the investigators, you know, spending all of this time there with equipment, and every one of them's got a camera, every one of them's got a recorder, but we're not seeing the pictures. We're seeing vague orbs, we're seeing it, we're hearing indistinct EVPs. The evidence just isn't compelling.
Yeah,
and that concerns me.
Yeah. So I know, Rick, before you get to your questions, because it's going to be rather involved, I have two from the chat room.
Absolutely.
So when we were talking about, you know, investigate with the lights on, Crystal wanted to know, well, what about places with no power? What would you do then?
Well, there are, I mean, you have to apply the location information.
Right.
Common sense. I mean,
yes.
if you are in the middle of a forest and there's no electrical outlet and it's nighttime and the witness, you know, if the witness says, I was there at 3 a.m. and it was pitch black, then you have to be there at the same time and deal with it.
Right.
And we do, there the technology can be usefully applied because, you know, we can, we have equipment that can allow us to function in those conditions and to obtain recordings.
Right.
But, you know, if the original witness was there at 8 p.m. and the lights were on, then why is the investigator there at 3 a.m. with the lights off using an infrared camera?
So right. I thought I was the only person that thought this way. Sorry.
It's just a correct application of the technology. You know, the technology is there to help us. It's not there to do the investigation for us.
Sure. And then Elaine wants to know if you take safety equipment with you on investigations, and if you do, what do you take?
We take safety very, very importantly. Each of our team, they don't always use all of the bits of safety equipment, but every team member has a high visibility jacket. And there's another reason for that, actually. But we have a high visibility jacket, we have a hard hat, and everybody has a two-way radio, walkie-talkie radio. And we always do a health and safety run through, noting the escape exits and et cetera, beforehand. And we have a backup system. If all else fails, we have a whistle.
Oh, there you go.
Because you can't always rely on the radios. So we have a whistle each as well, so we can blow that. And if you hear the whistle blow, you run away. But the high-vis jackets, they have a secondary purpose. And it was the secondary purpose that was the original reason for using them. On a lot of investigations in the early days, we would notice people or indistinct shapes and shadows wandering past the camera, you know, at the extreme range of the vision. And you'd then spend an hour working out where everybody was and making sure it wasn't a team member. So then we gave everybody high-vis jackets on the principle that ghosts don't wear them.
That's a great idea. So what kind of material? I mean, what are you talking about that makes a jacket high visibility?
These are just the workman's type jackets. These reflective, bright orange, bright yellow, high-vis, day glow colors. I don't know of a single ghost report within the UK where a ghost was seen to be wearing a high visibility day glow jacket. So, you know, if we get one of them walk in front of the camera, it's a case of find the investigator who blundered.
That's a brilliant idea. I love that.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, Rick, go.
Yeah. I really wanted us to take some time and touch on infrasound. It's something that I find that's very interesting. And in fact, my first exposure to the idea of infrasound was from a BBC documentary on the Haunted Underground, the subway system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really want to touch on it because I'd like to start using it myself. But what exactly is infrasound?
Okay. Simply put, I think everybody is familiar with the idea of the dog whistle and the fact that it can generate ultrasound, very high frequency sound that's above the range of hearing, but that our cute pet dogs can hear. But at the opposite end of the spectrum, we have very low frequency sound that we can't hear. That's infrasound.
Okay.
Now, so it's just sound that we can't hear.
So, okay, but then how does this affect, a person having a mystical experience?
Okay. The mechanisms aren't entirely understood yet. But if we can, again, just touch on ultrasound at the opposite end of the spectrum, there are devices that are commercially available and in use today. There's a device called the Mosquito, which okay. is used outside stores or in areas where people might want to deter juveniles, teenagers, because their hearing is much more acute at the higher frequency ranges than, for example, an adult would be. So these Mosquito devices generate ultrasound or close to ultrasound at a range of about 18,000 kilohertz. 18,000 hertz, sorry. And these teenagers don't like it. It's distracting, it's unnerving, it's ear-piercing, and they move away. But the general adult population can't hear it. The military use a device called LRAD, the long-range acoustic device, which is a form of high-frequency sound weapon. It drives a penetrating high-frequency sound beam towards a... The US Navy have them, for example, to prevent boarders or terrorists coming close to the ship.
Yeah,
they're also used in riot control. And there are several interesting YouTube videos of, I think it's LAPD, using an LRAD device as a riot control weapon or non-lethal weapon.
Sure.
So we know that sound does affect us. If we then drop down frequency to the sound that we can hear, we know that sound affects us. It affects our mood. We all have, for example, passages of music that make us happy, that make us sad, and we all accept on an everyday basis that music, sound, has these effects on our emotional state and indeed upon our psychological and physical state too. Video gamers use sound to speed up and slow down the heart rate of the game player by putting beats into the soundtrack of the video game. And these have been shown to increase the amount of adrenaline produced as the levels throughout the game step up. Infrasound is basically the big brother of sound. It has the longest waves. It has an effect on the total body. We can't hear it with our ears, but we can perceive it through our body. We can feel the vibrations, for example, as of the traffic rumbling on the freeway. We can feel the vibration as the jetliner takes off. So we know it has these effects. And what's been quite interesting is that when NASA and other agencies were conducting studies of infrasound exposure on astronauts and on workers exposed to these high levels of sound pressure, to see how they performed, they documented all of these effects that people... reported an increase in heart rate, that they sweated more, that they reported feeling anxious, etc., etc., etc. And paranormal researchers, I think the first one was in the 1970s, a Canadian researcher, Michael Persinger,
yes.
noticed that feelings of foreboding that were associated, people reported before earthquakes, might be linked to the infrasound waves that were being produced by the seismic stresses. But it was Vic Tandy in the 1990s who actually put the two together properly and came out with the seminal paper, Ghost in the Machine, which he observed some effects within the laboratory, where a fencing saw blade was vibrating, and he did some mathematical calculations based upon the room measurements and some further studies to try and find the cause, which he pinned down to be a conditioning fan.
Okay.
And he produced his paper. that infrasound causes these, you know, is it produces these known effects from the NASA studies and the military studies, and these effects are exactly the same as people's paranormal effects.
Okay.
Therefore, infrasound was a likely candidate for a causative agent. And you know, he released that paper, and it just it rocketed. It just over the hills and far away. Right. You know, it was picked up. I don't think there are many paranormal groups out there that don't have a page about infrasound. The last time I looked, I think there was 150,000 Google, you know, individual Google pages related to Tandy's first paper.
Sure. Mm, wow. I mean, I have never even heard of it until I saw the documentary on the Haunted Underground. But the thing that really that I think I'm going to differ with you on is also the same thing with, you know, when Ghost Hunters came out, that, well, EMFs, they cause people to have a mystical experience or see something. But do you think it's a possibility that this is something that actually fuels, that gives strength to something that's already there?
Well, I'm in the fortunate position to have been able to test the idea.
Sure.
And reproduce the effect, and have done on numerous occasions where we have taken groups of people knowingly and unknowingly into various locations and subjected them to different frequencies, different types of infrasound, and been able to document the effects. And we can reproduce a wide range of these experiences that are exactly the same as, and in fact, in the absence of us telling them that we're doing stuff with infrasound, the majority of people actually do report them as being paranormal in origin. So I think we can be fairly certain that we're dealing with a cause and effect in relation to infrasound. I mean, there are you know, as many myths about infrasound, I think, almost as EMF had at one point. You know, sure. We've got infrasonic EVPs, we've got infrasound related to orbs, we have infrasound as a function of, I think this is what you might have been referring to, the more, you know, if you're subjected to infrasound, it increases your psychic abilities.
Yeah.
Or that spirits can use infrasound in some way,
right,
in order to be able to manifest. But I would counter by saying that I can, and have done, been able to reproduce many of the effects that people report within haunted locations by using infrasound. But I'm not claiming that infrasound causes everybody to see ghosts. In fact, the research actually suggests that it's not responsible for very many, because on its own, you know, where you are in Chicago, where I am in the UK, right now, you will be experiencing quite high levels of ambient infrasound. But you're...
No, please go ahead. I do have a question about that, because it's there is something, you know, near my house that could cause that. Actually, just right in my backyard, in fact. But please, you know, go ahead, and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. But as I was saying, where you are and where I am right now, we are both being subjected to quite high levels of infrasound. The difference is, neither of us are on an investigation. Neither of us are sitting in a haunted location where we are becoming hypersensitive to our experience. So if you're sitting on an investigation and you suddenly, you know, you feel out of sorts, you feel nauseous or anxious or headachy, or you start to get any sort of strange sensation, you're not going to blame something that you can't hear, smell, taste, or sense, the infrasound. So any effects of the infrasound, you are more likely to attribute to the paranormal.
Okay. See, and it's interesting that you say that you know, we're not sitting in a haunted location. I am. my house, specifically my basement specifically, has the most active. I call him Paul. We also have The Man on the Stairs, who I've heard on numerous occasions. First time I was, we have a 2-year-old, and I was getting my son's room ready for bed, and my wife had him in the tub, and I'm standing up there, and all of a sudden I can hear very clearly the sound of a person walking up the stairs. And Steve, I'm not just talking about the squeaking of the stairs, because like I said, we live in a 100-year-old house, so of course there's going to be squeaks. I could hear actual footfalls on the steps accompanying those squeaks. In my basement, I have seen Paul. I've seen him twice, actually. Once as just a shadow, and the other time is like, he literally passed right in front of my face. And he seems to like to watch me as I'm on the treadmill or working out in the basement or whatever. He doesn't bother me. It bothers my wife. My wife doesn't like coming down here because she has heard things in the basement. But the interesting thing is maybe 20 or 30 yards right behind my house is a railroad track.
Right.
And here's what I'm wondering is, I mean, I know what I've seen. I know what I've experienced. I've heard him knock on the walls when I've asked like certain questions. And like I said, I've seen him literally walk in front of my face while I'm on the treadmill. And that's another thing too. I'm on the treadmill. You know, there's noise that's obviously there's infrasound coming off that. There's probably high levels of EMF. Now, in your opinion, am I experiencing Paul? Am I experiencing man on stairs? Or am I somehow just being affected by this infrasound or high EMF levels?
Well, first of all, I would not be naive or stupid enough to discount the possibility of the existence of ghost spirits, because there is very compelling evidence to suggest that they indeed are a possibility.
Oh, of course, and I'm not even suggesting that.
With respect to the infrasound, that's omnipresent. The levels will change during the day relating to the weather. You said there's a railroad track nearby, so the levels will ramp up obviously when there's a train there, will drop down again when the train moves away. I would say that infrasound being linked to your sightings of Paul and the other experiences is highly unlikely. Because we know, for example, that only around about a third of the general population would have any experience anyway, because there does seem to be this degree of sensitivity to infrasound, not psychicness, in around about only a third of the general population. The other two thirds seem to be pretty much immune to whatever you're doing, unless you're doing something really extreme and making them fall over. So, you know, when on its own, infrasound is not a causal factor. It needs to be infrasound in conjunction with something else. Those other things tend to be the physical environment, and also the expectations, prior knowledge, and belief of the witness. So, if you're in a damp, haunted, uncomfortable, you know, nasty castle, looking for ghosts,
I would love to be. By the way, you know, one of these
yeah,
days
that'd
I
be awesome. That sounds great to me. wearing a high visibility jacket.
Yeah, where all us Brit ghost hunters spend our time. And you're being affected by infrasound, then more likely to be a set of factors that would produce a report of a paranormal experience or a paranormal-like experience. But if you're sitting in your apartment and you're getting the same levels of infrasound and you're watching the Cubs match, or you're on the treadmill, then no. You're missing a whole raft of factors. It's one factor, and it needs to be operating in conjunction with other factors too.
Okay. So Rick's question actually got me thinking, because one of the locations, the haunted locations that my team really has enjoyed spending time in, is right along railroad tracks as well. And so if there's a train coming, it's going to cause some vibration in the rails, and as you say, it's going to cause some infrasound as well. How far away is a train going to be, do you think, from a place like that where it can start to ramp up that infrasound and the vibration might affect?
In terms of the human effect, then probably within do you understand the concept of kilometers? We went decimal.
We learned it in grade school. They told us it was coming when we were adults. Yeah, and, you know, 30 years later, no.
They dragged us into the European Union and made us learn kilometers. but, yeah, we still have miles. So probably about half a mile. But in terms of detecting and measuring the infrasound, the infrasound detection equipment I use could reliably detect a train 200 miles.
Wow.
Wow.
It can detect, from here, it can detect thunderstorms over the Mediterranean, so that's 500-600 miles. It can tell me the number of blades on a helicopter at 5 miles. It can tell me the number of cylinders in a vehicle engine at a mile. Yes, because we're dealing with something that's traveling a long way. Infrasound, because it's got a very long wavelength, it doesn't see buildings and obstructions like normal sound. Stand in a room and shout, you get an echo because the sound waves are actually physically smaller than the wall. But infrasound waves can be tens, hundreds, thousands of meters long. And they just don't see these objects. It will go straight through your house like it's not there, and continue on for hundreds and hundreds of miles. The recent meteorite that came down in Russia, was being detected by the infrasound arrays that are used for the nuclear test ban treaty as far away as Antarctica and the Pacific Islands of Hawaii. It's the American Navy have sonar systems on board their submarines that can listen to the infrasound beats of ships' propellers in the Pacific while the submarine's in the Atlantic.
Yes, I knew that.
These big waves travel a very, very long way.
So it can go through land masses. Can it go through like mountains and things too? Then
the ultra low frequency infrasound. These are from earthquakes, from big seismic events, volcanoes, such like. Yes, they can penetrate land masses, but what we're more interested in, because we've sort of evolved with that very, very low frequency infrasound, what's relatively new is the man-made frequencies, which tend to be mono frequency or quite tightly banded in groups of frequency. Remember I said we can count the number of blades, helicopter blades, because each one has its own tone. So we just count the number of tones, effectively.
Wow.
That's newer, and that's slightly higher up in frequency. So that would be normally above about 5 hertz and up to maybe, up into the audible range above 20. They don't travel quite as far, I think, for man-made stuff. I think, realistically, tens of miles. Rather than hundreds or thousands of miles.
So this fascinates me because one of the things you mentioned, one of the things that I have happened to me, and that's that I tend to be extremely geosensitive. I know when there's an earthquake coming. I'm picking up on infrasound.
That's one of the possibilities that's been suggested, and one of the possibilities where there actually is some science behind it as well. We use infrasound detection to measure earthquakes and to measure the sort of day-to-day seismic pulse of the planet. And it's been suggested by researchers that we already know, it's been documented that people are sensitive to infrasound, and that the sensitivity manifests as a range of psychophysical effects, one of which is feelings of foreboding or nervousness or anxiousness without knowing quite why. Sure. And so if you are, you know, a person who gets a little skittish, a little spooked before an earthquake or before a storm hits, it may be you have a well-developed infrasound sensitivity.
So would that be why, possibly then why animals also can sometimes go a little nuts before an earthquake?
Again, it's exactly the same. And indeed, we know that many animals use infrasound. Tigers, lions, all communicate and use infrasound. In fact, tigers, researchers have discovered, use infrasound as a weapon. There is an infrasonic element to the tiger's roar, which temporarily affects the prey animal and can startle it to the point where it's incapable of running or getting out of the attack path. And so the tiger has developed this as a weapon. And there are lots and lots of animals, large and small, that are able to perceive infrasound and use infrasound as a communication. So it's not, you know, it's entirely possible that animals use these vibrations, because that's all sound is ultimately. You know, we might not be able to hear the infrasound from a jet plane, but if you can feel it. You can feel the blast. If you've been to an air show, you can feel the pressure on your chest as the F-14 or F-15 takes off and climbs away. What you're actually feeling is infrasound. Those pressure waves that are hitting your chest are infrasound waves. You're not hearing them, but you're feeling them, you're sensing them.
And so how far away from a jet would you have to be for it to affect you in that way?
I can reliably, with the equipment I've got, and that's the only thing I would really be comfortable.
Sure.
I know I can reliably measure the infrasound from a jet passenger liner passing 40,000 feet above, and laterally 20 miles. So, as I said, tens of miles reliably, probably with more, you know, with more time, because I'm not focused on measuring 747s.
Sure.
Focusing on measuring buildings.
Sure.
But inevitably, you know, it's a gadget, so you leave it switched on.
I was going to say, you have a gadget, you point it at things. I get it.
Yeah. And you start discovering it can do other cool stuff too. I mean, infrasound is really cool. You can do some really neat tricks with it. We've done experiments where we've subjected people to infrasound, and I'm glad it's late at night and getting later over there, because one of the nicknames that our infrasound generator developed after one of the tests was the Orgasmatron. Because one or two of the ladies who were part of the test group said that it produced these very pleasant sensations.
Made them all tingly, huh?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, we said at the time, well, of course, you know, ladies are well known for climbing on top of the washing machine and...
You just took this in a whole different direction, but I will tell you this much, though.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the washing machine right now. No, I'm kidding.
But, you know... It got the nickname. With infrasound, we can make people fairly reliably fall over. You know, we can disorientate them using, you know, changing frequencies and amplitudes. We did one concert performance using infrasound in Liverpool some years ago, where, as an experiment, while we were setting up the equipment, we had some time, so we started playing around with the frequency. At the same time we were doing that, the 32-man horn section of the orchestra were rehearsing for about a minute till they left the building feeling very, very seasick and disturbed. And what was even more interesting is four floors below us, through this solid building that we were in, the security guard had to go outside and throw up.
Oh my gosh.
It can be, you know, it's very, very powerful, and you can have a lot of fun with it.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, do you find yourself like giggling like a mad scientist whenever you do this stuff?
That Liverpool one, they just finished a £1 million renovation of the building we were in, St. George's Hall, and it included a £200,000 pound crystal chandelier, which hung in the middle of the auditorium. And we were determined to make it move and dance. And much to the annoyance of the staff there, we actually succeeded. We were ourselves very, very, very nervous because we didn't want to drop it on the floor. But at the same time, we did want to see what
we wanted to make it move a little.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the, we'd taken it to Mary King's Close in Scotland for 10 days, where we'd been using it to generate infrasound as members of the public went on their normal ghost tours. And we either added it or didn't add it to different tours without their knowledge.
That's a great experiment.
And at the end of the week, we had 4 or 5 hours left, and we just let loose with the thing. We pushed it, everything to 110% because we'd never done it before.
Why not? It's there.
It's there. We didn't need it. We had nowhere to store these big infrasound tubes afterwards. We were going to dismantle it. We thought, well, if we blow it up, we blow it up. It doesn't matter. So we turned everything to maximum, and we played with it for a little while, and everybody survived. And the next day we packed up, and the following day a building about half a mile away unexpectedly collapsed.
Oh, God. Way to go, Steve.
That had stood 500 years, and we had nothing whatsoever to do with it.
But you wondered, didn't you?
Up above the building we were in, above us was the city, the sort of council chambers for the city of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And they came down and complained that all of the cutlery and crockery on the table was dancing around. And could we please stop whatever we were doing? So,
oh my God, you have a cool job. How cool is that?
Yeah, you do have a cool job.
So, you know what? We are actually at the point. This has gone a lot quicker than I thought. No, it always goes by quickly. Yeah. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to give out websites, any information that you want to give people about yourself, where they can find more about you, any shameless self-promotion you'd like to do. This is where we like to let you do it.
And of course, being British, we have nothing whatsoever to sell. we don't do conferences and write books and we have the Parascience website where there are links to a lot of the published infrasound research that was done for the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research. Because it is a journal, it is inaccessible. We've put it onto the Parascience website, which is www.parascience.org.uk. Add the UK because there's also a .org, which is an American, more esoteric group. So it's parascience.org.uk. There's the Society for Psychical Research's website, which is www.spr.ac.uk, which people might find of interest. As regards self-promotion, come and see me in Boston. When I think it's October, first week of October, I'm over there with Ron Kolek and the guys of Spirit Quest. I've said that I'm coming over as a missionary. You've sent us a lot of is it the Mormon Church to come over with the badges with?
Yes.
On?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We have lots of them over here, so I'm coming over from the Church of Common Sense to rid the world of orbs and K2 meters.
Oh, perfect. Come and stateside to do that. That's a great idea. Well, Steve, thank you. Go ahead.
No, I said I'd probably get lynched too.
Oh, no. So thank you so much. This has been absolutely fascinating. And yeah, I hope that some Thursday night when you feel like slamming some more espresso, you'll come back on and talk to us again.
Happy to.
All right. So go to sleep. Thank you so much for coming on. It's Steve Parsons.
Why wait now?
No, yeah, really. Now you're just going to stay up.
Yeah, that's it. Now you spoilt my whole night.
Oh, sorry about that. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for staying up late to talk to us, and I'll look forward to talking to you again. Okay, there you go. So, I have a dog in my face. Sorry, I'm trying to talk, and she's sticking her head in my mouth, you guys.
I'd like to see that.
So, Cheryl.
Yeah.
What do we have? We have about 8 minutes left, so what's coming up?
We have some guests coming up that are going to be outstanding. Next week, we have a guest that book. Hey, Book. Hey, Rick, you have a new name. It's called Book. yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That Rick set up for us, and that's Alexandra Holzer, paranormal researcher.
Awesome.
Daughter of Hans Holzer, the late Hans Holzer. Uh-huh. So she will be talking with us next Thursday, April 11th. And then the week after, the 18th, we have Paul Von Ward. And he is the author of a book called The Soul Genome, Science and Reincarnation. So that...
Ooh, one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, so that is going to be a lot of fun. And then I also want to plug the last show of the month on April 25th because it's a return guest who we did not have nearly enough time to question the last time he was on. His name
is Andrew Bushago.
Bushago. Finally got the right pronunciation of his last name. Andrew Bushago, and he is the team leader of Project...
Andrew.
Andrew.
Okay,
Andrew.
team leader Project Pegasus, and you know he's time traveled.
Allegedly,
it's such an interesting conversation. I mean, so we could probably have him on every week, and I'd be happy.
Yeah, he's pretty fascinating.
Yeah,
I'm
really fascinating.
Excited. Do we get him for the whole show this
the
time?
The whole show.
Woohoo!
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Huh?
Sounds very good, and I'd like to mention it's now 6 weeks until Dr. Raymond Moody. All right.
Ooh.
Not to take anything away from any of our other fabulous guests.
No. For some of us, he's an icon in the field, and just being able to talk to him about his research and his work is just kind of mind-blowing. I'm really looking forward to it.
I know. And I actually just finished rereading his autobiography.
Okay.
I mean, he only came out with it last year, and I've read it twice now.
Oh, wow.
And I have this list of questions. We may have to keep him on for like 3 shows or something. I don't know. He'll probably...
You know, it's like, I'm familiar with him, but I'm really going to have to, you know, do my homework on him.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well...
Definitely.
Rob in chat says, "Who is the moody guy?"
Well, he invented the term near-death experience, right?
He is a pioneer of. Sorry, the dog's in my mouth again. This is why they're never allowed in here with me. She's a snuggler, but she sticks her head in my mouth.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so I always have dog fur on my tug, which is lovely.
Nice.
And I can't wear lip gloss for obvious reasons. Anyway, yes, he is a pioneer of near-death experience research. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, he's also done research into reincarnation. Mm-hmm. He did experiments in scrying with the psychomantium. And he also did research into, and this is cool, I bet most people haven't heard of this, shared death experiences.
That's actually a new one to me.
Yeah, so the shared death experience is when a group of people are at the bedside of a dying person, and as the person dies, they have the near-death experience with the person who dies.
Okay, so then it's not so new to me then. I have heard of that before, but I've
shared
never heard
death
of
the, experience.
I've never heard of the term before, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
intriguing.
Yay, excited. All right, definitely. And magazine coming out tonight.
So
paranormalunderground.net.
Yeah, if everybody wakes up tomorrow, the first thing they should do is go to the website and check out the magazine.
Phrase that pays Nellie Sharp to editor@paranormalunderground.net. It'll win you fabulous Karen Fraser prizes.
Come on, people. I've only gotten one entry since we started the show.
One entry? Is it Patty Valdez?
No. It's not Patty.
Okay, hold on one second because I am going to say something about the jewelry that Karen makes. Karen, you made me the mala bracelet.
Yes.
And I love it. You know, it's on my shrine, and you know, I wear it when, you know, I need that extra special, you know, like moments of, you know, saying my mantra or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. I love it. And you know, anybody, just, you know, go talk to Karen. Just, it's worth the money, and it's worth entering into this contest so you could win.
That's right. So yep. He's saying buy my jewelry, Mary
buy
Elizabeth.
Buy your jewelry.
Mary Elizabeth Jewels on Etsy, and also Namaste Prayer Beads on Etsy. Those are both of my shops. And yeah, you can also find links to those on my website, KarenFraser.com.
By the way, I was just browsing your shop, your jewelry shop, and it's like I want everything. I can't make up my mind.
Well, buy some.
All right. I will.
I made a bunch of special stuff for the Oregon Goes Conference, and I sold a lot, but the stuff that I didn't sell, I mm-hmm. brought back and put in my Mary Elizabeth Jewels, and I've kind of branched out into some very different types of things that are, you know, I have the really fine jewelry, and then I have some really fun stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
all
cool.
All right, so that's it. We are out of time. Stick
By the way, I'm sorry, real quick, I just want to say thank you to Steve because he stayed up super late. Okay, thanks, Steve.
But he drank. Thanks, Steve. He drank espresso.
Yeah.
And up next is Radio Onyx. Stick around for that.
Not tonight.
Oh, but not tonight.
He's celebrating his birthday.
That's right. It's his 21st birthday.
Yeah.
His Happy 21st birthday.
Happy birthday.
Have a beer for me. So before the dog tries to crawl in my mouth again, which she's doing, I'll
You need
this
to tell Jim
way.
To stay away when you're trying to do the show.
Right? Jim's at work, actually. So come back next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Other times in the flyover state, it's Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. You guys all have a great week. Thanks. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next time, keep exploring the unexplained at paranormalunderground.net. Please join us next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.